This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents The Host, written by Stephanie Meyer, read by Kate Redding. Prologue. Inserted. The healer's name was Ford's Deep Waters. Because he was a soul, by nature he was all things good, compassionate, patient, honest, virtuous, and full of love. Anxiety was an unusual emotion for Ford's Deep Waters. Irritation was even rarer. However, because Ford's Deep Waters lived inside a human body, irritation was sometimes inescapable. As the whispers of the healing students buzzed in the far corner of the operating room, his lips pressed together into a tight line. The expression felt out of place on a mouth more often given to smiling. Darren, his regular assistant, saw the grimace and patted his shoulder. "They're just curious, Fords," he said quietly. "An insertion is hardly an interesting or challenging procedure. Any soul on the street could perform it in an emergency. There's nothing for them to learn by observing today." Ford's was surprised to hear the sharp edge marring his normally soothing voice. "They've never seen a grown human before," Darren said. Ford's raised one eyebrow. "Are they blind to each other's faces? Do they not have mirrors? You know what I mean. A wild human, still soulless, one of the insurgents." Ford's looked at the girl's unconscious body, laid out face down on the operating table. Pity swelled in his heart as he remembered the condition her poor broken body had been in when the Seekers had brought her to the healing facility. Such pain she'd endured. Of course she was perfect now, completely healed. Ford's had seen to that. "She looks the same as any of us," Ford's murmured to Darren. "We all have human faces, and when she wakes up, she will be one of us too. It's just exciting for them, that's all. The soul we implant today deserves more respect than to have her host body gawked at this way. She'll already have far too much to deal with as she acclimates. It's not fair to put her through this." By this, he did not mean the gawking. Ford's heard the sharp edge return to his voice. Darren patted him again. "It will be fine. The Seeker needs information, and..." At the word Seeker, Ford's gave Darren a look that could only be described as a glare. Darren blinked in shock. "I'm sorry," Ford's apologized at once. "I didn't mean to react so negatively. It's just that I fear for this soul." His eyes moved to the cryo tank on its stand beside the table. The light was a steady dull red, indicating that it was occupied and in hibernation mode. "This soul was specially picked for the assignment," Darren said soothingly. "She is exceptional among our kind, braver than most. Her lives speak for themselves. I think she would volunteer, if it were possible to ask her." Who among us would not volunteer if asked to do something for the greater good? But is that really the case here? Is the greater good served by this, The question is not her willingness, but what it is right to ask any soul to bear. The healing students were discussing the hibernating soul as well. Fords could hear the whispers clearly. Their voices were rising now, getting louder with their excitement. She's lived on 6 planets.
I heard 7.
I heard she's never lived 2 terms as the same host species.
Is that possible?
She's been almost everything. A flower, a bear, a spider, a seaweed, a bat, even a dragon. I don't believe it. Not 7 planets.
At least 7. She started on the origin.
Really? The origin?
Quiet, please, Fords interrupted. If you cannot observe professionally and silently, then I will have to ask you to remove yourselves.
Abashed, the 6 students fell silent and edged away from one another.
Let's get on with this, Darren.
Everything was prepared. The appropriate medicines were laid out beside the human girl. Her long dark hair was secured beneath a surgical cap, exposing her slender neck. Deeply sedated, she breathed slowly in and out. Her sun-browned skin had barely a mark to show for her accident.
Begin thaw sequence now, please, Darren.
The gray-haired assistant was already waiting beside the cryotank, his hand resting on the dial. He flipped the safety back and spun down on the dial. The red light atop the small gray cylinder began to pulse, flashing faster as the seconds passed, changing color. Fords concentrated on the unconscious body. He edged the scalpel through the skin at the base of the subject's skull with small, precise movements, and then sprayed on the medication that stilled the excess flow of blood before he widened the fissure. Fords delved delicately beneath the neck muscles, careful not to injure them, exposing the pale bones at the top of the spinal column.
The soul is ready, Fords, Darren informed him. So am I. Bring her.
Fords felt Darren at his elbow, and knew without looking that his assistant would be prepared, his hand stretched out and waiting. They had worked together for many years now. Fords held the gap open.
Send her home, he whispered.
Darren's hand moved into view, the silver gleam of an awaking soul in his cupped palm. Fords never saw an exposed soul without being struck by the beauty of it. The soul shone in the brilliant lights of the operating room, brighter than the reflective silver instrument in his hand. Like a living ribbon, she twisted and rippled, stretching, happy to be free of the cryotank. Her thin, feathery attachments, nearly 1,000 of them, billowed softly like pale silver hair. Though they were all lovely, this one seemed particularly graceful to Ford's deep waters. He was not alone in his reaction. He heard Darren's soft sigh, heard the admiring murmurs of the students. Gently, Darren placed the small, glistening creature inside the opening Ford's had made in the human's neck. The soul slid smoothly into the offered space, weaving herself into the alien anatomy. Fords admired the skill with which she possessed her new home. Her attachments wound tightly into place around the nerve centers, some elongating and reaching deeper to where he couldn't see, under and up into the brain, the optic nerves, the ear canals. She was very quick, very firm in her movements. Soon, only one small segment of her glistening body was visible.
Well done,
he whispered to her, knowing that she could not hear him. The human girl was the one with ears, and she still slept soundly. It was a routine matter to finish the job. He cleaned and healed the wound, applied the salve that sealed the incision closed behind the sole, and then brushed the scar-softening powder across the line left on her neck.
Perfect, as usual, said the assistant,
who, for some reason unfathomable to Fords, had never made a change from his human host's name, Darren. Fords sighed.
I regret this day's work. You're only doing your duty as a healer. This is the rare occasion when healing creates an injury.
Darren began to clean up the workstation. He didn't seem to know how to answer. Fords was filling his calling. That was enough for Darren. But not enough for Ford's Deep Waters, who was a true healer to the core of his being. He gazed anxiously at the human female's body, peaceful in slumber, knowing that this peace would be shattered as soon as she awoke. All the horror of this young woman's end would be borne by the innocent soul he'd just placed inside her. As he leaned over the human and whispered in her ear, Fords wished fervently that the soul inside could hear him now.
Good luck, little wanderer. Good luck. How I wish you didn't need it.
Chapter 1. Remembered. I knew it would begin with the end, and the end would look like death to these eyes. I had been warned. Not these eyes. My eyes. Mine. This was me now. The language I found myself using was odd, but it made sense. Choppy, boxy, blind, and linear. Impossibly crippled in comparison to many I'd used, yet still it managed to find fluidity and expression. Sometimes beauty. My language now. My native tongue. With the truest instinct of my kind, I'd bound myself securely into the body's center of thought. Twined myself inescapably into its every breath and reflex until it was no longer a separate entity. It was me. Not the body. My body. I felt the sedation wearing off and lucidity taking its place. I braced myself for the onslaught of the first memory, which would really be the last memory, the last moments this body had experienced, the memory of the end. I had been warned thoroughly of what would happen now. These human emotions would be stronger, more vital than the feelings of any other species I had been. I had tried to prepare myself. The memory came, and as I'd been warned, it was not something that could ever be prepared for. It seared with sharp color and ringing sound, cold on her skin, pain gripping her limbs, burning them. The taste was fiercely metallic in her mouth. And there was the new sense, the fifth sense I'd never had, that took the particles from the air and transformed them into strange messages and pleasures and warnings in her brain. Scents. They were distracting, confusing to me, but not to her memory. The memory had no time for the novelties of smell. The memory was only fear. Fear locked her in a vice, goading the blunt, clumsy limbs forward, but hampering them at the same time. To flee. To run. It was all she could do. I failed. The memory that was not mine was so frighteningly strong and clear that it sliced through my control, overwhelmed the detachment, the knowledge that this was just a memory and not me. Sucked into the hell that was the last minute of her life, I was she, and we were running. It's so dark. I can't see. I can't see the floor. I can't see my hands stretched out in front of me. I run blind and try to hear the pursuit I can feel behind me, but the pulse is so loud behind my ears it drowns everything else out. It's cold. It shouldn't matter now, but it hurts. I'm so cold. The air in her nose was uncomfortable. Bad. A bad smell. For 1 second that discomfort pulled me free of the memory. But it was only a second, and then I was dragged in again, and my eyes filled with horrified tears. I'm lost. We're lost. It's over. They're right behind me now, loud and close. There are so many footsteps. I am alone. I've failed. The Seekers are calling. The sound of their voices twists my stomach. I'm going to be sick. It's fine. It's fine, one lies, trying to calm me, to slow me. Her voice is disturbed by the effort of her breathing. Be careful, another shouts in warning.
Don't hurt yourself,
one of them pleads, a deep voice full of concern. Concern!
Heat shot through my veins, and a violent hatred nearly choked me. I had never felt such an emotion as this in all my lives. For another second, my revulsion pulled me away from the memory. A high, shrill keening pierced my ears and pulsed in my head. The sound scraped through my airways. There was a weak pain in my throat.
Screaming, my body explained. You're screaming.
I froze in shock, and the sound broke off abruptly. This was not a memory. My body, she was thinking, speaking to me. But the memory was stronger in that moment than my astonishment.
Please, they cry, there is danger ahead.
The danger is behind, I scream back in my mind. But I see what they mean. A feeble stream of light, coming from who knows where, shines on the end of the hall. It is not the flat wall or the locked door, the dead end I feared and expected. It is a black hole, an elevator shaft, abandoned, empty, and condemned like this building, once a hiding place, now a tomb. A surge of relief floods through me as I race forward. There is a way. No way to survive, but perhaps a way to win.
No, no, no!
This thought was all mine, and I fought to pull myself away from her, but we were together, and we sprinted for the edge of death.
Please!
The shouts are more desperate. I feel like laughing when I know that I am fast enough. I imagine their hands clutching for me just inches behind my back, but I am as fast as I need to be. I don't even pause at the end of the floor. The hole rises up to meet me mid-stride. The emptiness swallows me. My legs flail, useless. My hands grip the air, claw through it, searching for anything solid. Cold blows past me like tornado winds. I hear the thud before I feel it. The wind is gone. And then pain is everywhere. Pain is everything. Make it stop. Not high enough, I whisper to myself through the pain. When will the pain end? When? The blackness swallowed up the agony, and I was weak with gratitude that the memory had come to this most final of conclusions. The blackness took all, and I was free. I took a breath to steady myself, as was this body's habit. My body. But then the color rushed back, the memory reared up and engulfed me again.
No!
I panicked, fearing the cold and the pain and the very fear itself. But this was not the same memory. This was a memory within a memory. A final memory, like a last gasp of air, yet somehow even stronger than the first. The blackness took all but this. A face. The face was as alien to me as the faceless serpentine tentacles of my last host body would be to this new body. I'd seen this kind of face in the images I had been given to prepare for this world. It was hard to tell them apart, to see the tiny variations in color and shape that were the only markers of the individual. So much the same, all of them. Noses centered in the middle of the sphere, eyes above and mouths below. Ears around the sides. A collection of senses all but touch, concentrated in one place. Skin over bones. Hair growing on the crown, and in strange furry lines above the eyes. Some had more fur lower down on the jaw. Those were always males. The colors ranged through the brown scale from pale cream to a deep, almost black. Aside from that, how to know one from the other? This face, I would have known among millions. This face was a hard rectangle, the shape of the bones strong under the skin. In color, it was a light golden brown. The hair was just a few shades darker than the skin, except where flaxen streaks lightened it, and it covered only the head and the odd fur stripes above the eyes. The circular irises in the white eyeballs were darker than the hair, but like the hair, flecked with light. There were small lines around the eyes, and her memories told me the lines were from smiling and squinting into sunlight. I knew nothing of what passed for beauty among these strangers, and yet I knew that this face was beautiful. I wanted to keep looking at it. As soon as I realized this, it disappeared.
"Mine!"
spoke the alien thought that should not have existed. Again, I was frozen, stunned. There should have been no one here but me. And yet this thought was so strong and so aware. Impossible. How was she still here? This was me now. "Mine," I rebuked her, the power and authority that belonged to me alone flowing through the word. "Everything is mine." So why am I talking back to her, I wondered, as the voices interrupted my thoughts. Chapter 2. Overheard. The voices were soft and close, and though I was only now aware of them, apparently in the middle of a murmured conversation.
"I'm afraid it's too much for her," one said.
The voice was soft but deep, male.
"Too much for anyone. Such violence."
The tone spoke of revulsion.
"She screamed only once,"
said a higher, reedy female voice, pointing this out with a hint of glee, as if she were winning an argument.
"I know,"
the man admitted.
"She is very strong. Others have had much more trauma with much less cause."
"I'm sure she'll be fine. Just as I told you."
"Maybe you missed your calling."
There was an edge to the man's voice. Sarcasm, my language banks informed me.
"Perhaps you were meant to be a healer, like me."
The woman made a sound of amusement. Laughter.
"I doubt that. We seekers prefer a different sort of diagnosis."
My body knew this word, this title. Seeker. It sent a shudder of fear down my spine. A leftover reaction. Of course, I had no reason to fear seekers.
"I sometimes wonder if the infection of humanity touches those in your profession," the man mused, his voice still sour with annoyance. "Violence is part of your life choice. Does enough of your body's native temperament linger to give you enjoyment of the horror?"
I was surprised at his accusation, at his tone. The discussion was almost like an argument, something my host was familiar with, but that I'd never experienced. The woman was defensive.
"We do not choose violence. We face it when we must, and it's a good thing for the rest of you that some of us are strong enough for the unpleasantness. Your peace would be shattered without our work."
"Once upon a time. Your vocation will soon be obsolete, I think."
"The error of that statement lies on the bed there."
"One human girl, alone and unarmed. Yes, quite a threat to our peace."
The woman breathed out heavily, a sigh.
"But where did she come from? How did she appear in the middle of Chicago, a city long since civilized, hundreds of miles from any trace of rebel activity? Did she manage it alone?"
She listed the questions without seeming to seek an answer, as if she had already voiced them many times.
"That's your problem, not mine," the man said. "My job is to help this soul adapt herself to her new host without unnecessary pain or trauma, and you are here to interfere with my job."
Still slowly surfacing, acclimating myself to this new world of senses, I understood only now that I was the subject of the conversation. I was the soul they spoke of. It was a new connotation to the word,
a word that had meant many other things to my host. On every planet, we took a different name. Soul. I suppose it was an apt description. The unseen force that guides the body. The answers to my questions matter as much as your responsibilities to the soul.
That's debatable.
There was the sound of movement, and her voice was suddenly a whisper.
When will she become responsive? The sedation must be about to wear off.
When she's ready. Leave her be. She deserves to handle the situation however she finds most comfortable. Imagine the shock of her awakening inside a rebel host, injured to the point of death in the escape attempt. No one should have to endure such trauma in times of peace.
His voice rose with the increase of emotion.
She is strong.
The woman's tone was reassuring now.
See how well she did with the first memory, the worst memory. Whatever she expected, she handled this.
Why should she have to?
The man muttered, but he didn't seem to expect an answer. The woman answered anyway.
If we're to get the answers we need...
Need being your word, I would choose the term want.
Then someone must take on the unpleasantness, she continued, as if he had not interrupted. And I think, from all I know of this one, she would accept the challenge if there had been any way to ask her. What do you call her?
The man didn't answer for a long moment. The woman waited.
Wanderer,
he finally and unwillingly answered.
Fitting, she said. I don't have any official statistics, but she has to be one of the very few, if not the only one, who has wandered so far. Yes, Wanderer will suit her well until she chooses a new name for herself.
He said nothing.
Of course, she may assume the host's name. We found no matches on record for the fingerprints or retinal scan. I can't tell you what that name was.
She won't take the human name,
the man muttered. Her answer was conciliatory.
Everyone finds comfort in their own way.
This wanderer will need more comfort than most, thanks to your style of seeking.
There were sharp sounds, footsteps, staccato against a hard floor. When she spoke again, the woman's voice was across the room from the man.
You would have reacted poorly to the early days of this occupation, she said.
Perhaps you react poorly to peace.
The woman laughed, but the sound was false. There was no real amusement. My mind seemed well adapted to inferring the true meaning from tones and inflections.
You do not have a clear perception of what my calling entails. Long hours hunched over files and maps. Mostly desk work. Not very often the conflict or violence you seem to think it is.
10 days ago, you were armed with killing weapons, running this body down.
The exception, I assure you, not the rule. Do not forget. The weapons that disgust you are turned on our kind wherever we seekers have not been vigilant enough. The humans kill us happily whenever they have the ability to do so. Those whose lives have been touched by the hostility see us as heroes.
You speak as if a war were raging.
To the remains of the human race, one is.
These words were strong in my ears. My body reacted to them. I felt my breathing speed, heard the sound of my heart pumping louder than was usual. Beside the bed I lay on, a machine registered the increases with a muted beeping. The healer and the seeker were too involved in their disagreement to notice.
But one that even they must realize is long lost. They are outnumbered by, what, 1,000,000 to 1? I imagine you would know.
We estimate the odds are quite a bit higher in our favor, she admitted grudgingly.
The healer appeared to be content to let his side of the disagreement rest with that information. It was quiet for a moment. I used the empty time to evaluate my situation. Much was obvious. I was in a healing facility, recovering from an unusually traumatic insertion. I was sure the body that hosted me had been fully healed before it was given to me. a damaged host would have been disposed of. I considered the conflicting opinions of the healer and the seeker. According to the information I had been given before making the choice to come here, the healer had the right of it. Hostilities with the few remaining pockets of humans were all but over. The planet called Earth was as peaceful and serene as it looked from space, invitingly green and blue, wreathed in its harmless white vapors. As was the way of the soul, harmony was universal now. The verbal dissension between the healer and the seeker was out of character, strangely aggressive for our kind. It made me wonder. Could they be true? The whispered rumors that had undulated like waves through the thoughts of the... I was distracted, trying to find the name for my last host species. We'd had a name, I knew that. But no longer connected to that host, I could not remember the word. We'd used much simpler language than this, a silent language of thought that connected us all into one great mind. A necessary convenience when one was rooted forever into the wet black soil. I could describe that species in my new human language. We lived on the floor of the great ocean that covered the entire surface of our world. A world that had a name, too, but that was also gone. We each had 100 arms, and on each arm 1,000 eyes, so that, with our thoughts connected, not one sight in the vast waters went unseen. There was no need for sound, so there was no way to hear it. We tasted the waters, and with our sight, that told us all we needed to know. We tasted the suns, so many leagues above the water, and turned their taste into the food we needed. I could describe us, but I could not name us. I sighed for the lost knowledge, and then returned my ponderings to what I'd overheard. Souls did not, as a rule, speak anything but the truth. Seekers, of course, had the requirements of their calling, but between souls there was never reason for a lie. With my last species' language of thought, it would have been impossible to lie, even had we wanted to. However, anchored as we were, we told ourselves stories to alleviate the boredom. Storytelling was the most honored of all talents, for it benefited everyone. Sometimes fact mixed with fiction so thoroughly that, though no lies were told, it was hard to remember what was strictly true. When we thought of the new planet, Earth, so dry, so varied, and filled with such violent, destructive denizens we could barely imagine them, our horror was sometimes overshadowed by our excitement. Stories spun themselves quickly around the thrilling new subject. The wars. Wars! Our kind having to fight, were first reported accurately and then embellished and fictionalized. When the stories conflicted with the official information I sought out, I naturally believed the first reports. But there were whispers of this, of human hosts so strong that the souls were forced to abandon them, hosts whose minds could not be completely suppressed, souls who took on the personality of the body rather than the other way around, stories, wild rumors, madness. But that seemed almost to be the healer's accusation. I dismissed the thought. The more likely meaning of his censure was the distaste most of us felt for the seeker's calling. Who would choose a life of conflict and pursuit? Who would be attracted to the chore of tracking down unwilling hosts and capturing them? Who would have the stomach to face the violence of this particular species, the hostile humans who killed so easily, so thoughtlessly? Here, on this planet, the seekers had become practically a militia. My new brain supplied the term for the unfamiliar concept. Most believed that only the least civilized souls, the least evolved, the lesser among us, would be drawn to the path of seeker. Still, on Earth, the seekers had gained new status. Never before had an occupation gone so awry. Never before had it turned into a fierce and bloody battle. Never before had the lives of so many souls been sacrificed. The seekers stood as a mighty shield,
and the souls of this world were thrice over indebted to them, for the safety they had carved out of the mayhem, for the risk of the final death that they faced willingly every day, and for the new bodies they continued to provide. Now that the danger was virtually past, it appeared the gratitude was fading, and for this seeker at least, the change was not a pleasant one. It was easy to imagine what her questions for me would be. Though the healer was trying to buy me time to adjust my new body, I knew I would do my best to help the seeker. Good citizenship was quintessential to every soul. So I took a deep breath to prepare myself. The monitor registered the movement. I knew I was stalling a bit. I hated to admit it, but I was afraid. To get the information the seeker needed, I would have to explore the violent memories that had made me scream in horror. More than that, I was afraid of the voice I'd heard so loudly in my head. But she was silent now, as was right. She was just a memory, too. I should not have been afraid. After all, I was called Wanderer now, and I'd earned the name. With another deep breath, I delved into the memories that frightened me, faced them head-on with my teeth locked together. I could skip past the end. It didn't overwhelm me now. In fast forward, I ran through the dark again, wincing, trying not to feel. It was over quickly. Once I was through that barrier, it wasn't hard to float through less alarming things and places, skimming for the information I wanted. I saw how she'd come to this cold city, driving by night in a stolen car chosen for its nondescript appearance. She'd walked through the streets of Chicago in darkness, shivering beneath her coat. She was doing her own seeking. There were others like her here, or so she hoped. One in particular, a friend. No, family. Not a sister. A cousin. The words came slower and slower, and at first I did not understand why. Was this forgotten? Lost in the trauma of an almost death? Was I still sluggish from unconsciousness? I struggled to think clearly. This sensation was unfamiliar. Was my body still sedated? I felt alert enough, but my mind labored unsuccessfully for the answers I wanted. I tried another avenue of searching, hoping for clearer responses. What was her goal? She would find Sharon. I fished out the name. And they would... I hit a wall. It was a blank, a nothing. I tried to circle around it, but I couldn't find the edges of the void. It was as if the information I sought had been erased. As if this brain had been damaged. Anger flashed through me, hot and wild. I gasped in surprise at the unexpected reaction. I'd heard of the emotional instability of these human bodies, but this was beyond my ability to anticipate. In 8 full lives, I'd never had an emotion touch me with such force. I felt the blood pulse through my neck, pounding behind my ears. My hands tightened into fists. The machines beside me reported the acceleration of my heartbeats. There was a reaction in the room. The sharp tap of the seeker's shoes approached me, mingled with a quieter shuffle that must have been the healer. "Welcome to Earth, Wanderer," the female voice said. Chapter 3. Resisted.
"She won't recognize the new name," the healer murmured.
A new sensation distracted me. Something pleasant. A change in the air as the seeker stood at my side. A scent, I realized. Something different than the sterile, odorless room. Perfume, my new mind told me. Floral. Lush. "Can you hear me?" the seeker asked, interrupting my analysis. "Are you aware?"
"Take your time,"
the healer urged, in a softer voice than the one he had used before. I did not open my eyes. I did not want to be distracted. My mind gave me the words I needed, and the tone that would convey what I couldn't say without using many words. Have I been placed in a damaged host in order to gain the information you need, Seeker? There was a gasp. Surprise and outrage mingled, and something warm touched my skin, covered my hand.
Of course not, Wanderer, the man said reassuringly. Even a Seeker would stop at some things.
The Seeker gasped again. Hist, my mind corrected. Then why doesn't this mind function correctly?
There was a pause.
The scans were perfect, the Seeker said.
Her words not reassuring, but argumentative. Did she mean to quarrel with me?
The body was entirely healed.
From a suicide attempt that was perilously close to succeeding. My tone was stiff, still angry. I wasn't used to anger. It was hard to contain it.
Everything was in perfect order, the healer cut her off.
What is missing? He asked. Clearly you've accessed speech.
Memory. I was trying to find what the Seeker wants.
Though there was no sound, there was a change. The atmosphere, which had gone tense at my accusation, relaxed. I wondered how I knew this.
I had a strange sensation that I was somehow receiving more than my five senses were giving me, almost a feeling that there was another sense on the fringes, not quite harnessed. Intuition? That was almost the right word. As if any creature needed more than five senses.
The Seeker cleared her throat, but it was the healer who answered.
Ah, he said, don't make yourself anxious about some partial memory difficulties. That's, well, not to be expected exactly, but not surprising, considering.
I don't understand your meaning. This host was part of the human resistance.
There was a hint of excitement in the Seeker's voice now.
Those humans who were aware of us before insertion are more difficult to subdue. This one still resists.
There was a moment of silence while they waited for my response.
Resisting? The host was blocking my access?
Again, the heat of my anger surprised me.
Am I correctly bound? I asked, my voice distorted because it came through my teeth.
Yes, the healer said. All 827 points are latched securely in the optimum positions.
This mind used more of my faculties than any host before, leaving me only 181 spare attachments. Perhaps the numerous bindings were the reason the emotions were so vivid. I decided to open my eyes. I felt the need to double-check the healer's promises and make sure the rest of me worked. Light, bright, painful, I closed my eyes again. The last light I had seen had been filtered through 100 ocean fathoms. But these eyes had seen brighter and could handle it. I opened them narrowly, keeping my eyelashes feathered over the breach.
Would you like me to turn down the lights?
No, healer. My eyes will adjust.
Very good, he said.
And I understood that his approval was meant for my casual use of the possessive. Both waited quietly while my eyes slowly widened. My mind recognized this as an average room in a medical facility, a hospital. The ceiling tiles were white with darker speckles. The lights were rectangular and the same size as the tiles, replacing them at regular intervals. The walls were light green, a calming color, but also the color of sickness. A poor choice, in my quickly formed opinion. The people facing me were more interesting than the room. The word doctor sounded in my mind as soon as my eyes fastened on the healer. He wore loose-fitting blue-green clothes that left his arms bare. Scrubs. He had hair on his face, a strange color that my memory called red. Red. It had been 3 worlds since I had seen the color, or any of its relatives. Even this gingery gold filled me with nostalgia. His face was generically human to me, but the knowledge in my memory applied the word kind. An impatient breath pulled my attention to the seeker. She was very small. If she had remained still, it would have taken me longer to notice her there beside the healer. She didn't draw the eye, a darkness in the bright room. She wore black from chin to wrists, a conservative suit with a silk turtleneck underneath. Her hair was black, too. It grew to her chin and was pushed back behind her ears. Her skin was darker than the healer's, olive-toned. The tiny changes in humans' expressions were so minimal they were very hard to read. My memory could name the look on this woman's face, though. The black brows, slanted down over the slightly bulging eyes, created a familiar design. Not quite anger. Intensity. Irritation. "How often does this happen?" I asked, looking at the healer again.
"Not often," the healer admitted. "We have so few full-grown hosts available anymore. The immature hosts are entirely pliable, but you indicated that you preferred to begin as an adult."
"Yes."
"Most requests are the opposite. The human lifespan is much shorter than you're used to."
"I'm well versed in all the facts, healer. Have you dealt with this resistance before yourself?"
"Only once, myself."
"Tell me the facts of the case." I paused. "Please," I added, feeling a lack of courtesy in my command. The healer sighed. The seeker began tapping her fingers against her arm, a sign of impatience. She did not care to wait for what she wanted.
"This occurred 4 years ago," the healer began. "The soul involved had requested an adult male host. The first one to be available was a human who had been living in a pocket of human resistance since the early years of the occupation. The human knew what would happen when he was caught."
"Just as my host did."
Yes.
He cleared his throat.
"This was only the soul's second life. He came from Blind World."
"Blind World?" I asked, cocking my head to the side reflexively.
"Oh, sorry. You wouldn't know our nicknames. This was one of yours, though, was it not?"
He pulled a device from his pocket, a computer, and scanned quickly.
"Yes, your seventh planet, in the 81st sector."
"Blind World?" I said again, my voice now disapproving.
"Yes, well, some who have lived there prefer to call it the Singing World."
I nodded slowly. I liked that better. "And some who've never been there call it Planet of the Bats," the seeker muttered. I turned my eyes to her, feeling them narrow as my mind dredged up the appropriate image of the ugly flying rodent she referred to.
"I assume you are one who has never lived there, seeker," the healer said lightly. "We called this soul Racing Song at first. It was a loose translation of his name on the Singing World. But he soon opted to take the name of his host, Kevin. Though he was slated for a calling in musical performance, given his background, he said he felt more comfortable continuing in the host's previous line of work, which was mechanical. These signs were somewhat worrisome to his assigned comforter, but they were well within normal bounds. Then Kevin started to complain that he was blacking out for periods of time. They brought him back to me, and we ran extensive tests to make sure there was no hidden flaw in the host's brain. During the testing, several healers noted marked differences in his behavior and personality. When we questioned him about this, he claimed to have no memory of certain statements and actions. We continued to observe him along with his comforter and eventually discovered that the host was periodically taking control of Kevin's body."
"Taking control?"
My eyes strained wide.
"With the soul unaware? The host took the body back?"
"Sadly, yes. Kevin was not strong enough to suppress this host."
"Not strong enough? Would they think me weak as well?"
"Was I weak?
that I could not force this mind to answer my questions? Weaker still, because her living thoughts had existed in my head, where there should be nothing but memory? I'd always thought of myself as strong. This idea of weakness made me flinch, made me feel shame.
The healer continued. Certain events occurred, and it was decided.
What events?
The healer looked down without answering.
What events? I demanded again. I believe I have a right to know.
The healer sighed. You do. Kevin physically attacked a healer while not himself, he winced. He knocked the healer unconscious with a blow from his fist and then found a scalpel on her person. We found him insensible. The host had tried to cut the soul out of his body.
It took me a moment before I could speak. Even then my voice was just a breath. What happened to them?
Luckily, the host was unable to stay conscious long enough to inflict real damage. Kevin was relocated, into an immature host this time. The troublesome host was in poor repair, and it was decided there wasn't much point in saving him. Kevin is 7 human years old now and perfectly normal, aside from the fact that he kept the name Kevin, that is. His guardians are taking great care that he is heavily exposed to music, and that is coming along well.
The last was added as if it were good news. News that could somehow cancel out the rest. Why?
I cleared my throat so that my voice could gain some volume.
Why have these risks not been shared? Actually, the seeker broke in. It is very clearly stated in all recruitment propaganda that assimilating the remaining adult human hosts is much more challenging than assimilating a child. An immature host is highly recommended. The word, challenging, does not quite cover Kevin's story, I whispered. Yes, well, you preferred to ignore the recommendation.
She held up her hands in a peacemaking gesture when my body tensed, causing the stiff fabric on the narrow bed to crackle softly.
Not that I blame you. Childhood is extraordinarily tedious, and you are clearly not the average soul. I have every confidence that this is well within your abilities to handle. This is just another host. I'm sure you will have full access and control shortly.
By this point in my observations of the seeker, I was surprised that she'd had the patience to wait for any delay, even my personal acclimatization. I sensed her disappointment in my lack of information, and it brought back some of the unfamiliar feelings of anger.
Did it not occur to you that you could get the answers you seek by being inserted into this body yourself?
I asked. She stiffened.
I'm no skipper.
My eyebrows pulled up automatically. Another nickname, the healer explained, for those who do not complete a life term in their host. I nodded in understanding. We'd had a name for it on my other worlds. On no world was it smiled upon. So I quit quizzing the seeker and gave her what I could. Her name was Melanie Strider. She was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She was in Los Angeles when the occupation became known to her, and she hid in the wilderness for a few years before finding... Sorry, I'll try that one again later. The body has seen 20 years. She drove to Chicago from... I shook my head. There were several stages, not all of them alone. The vehicle was stolen. She was searching for a cousin named Sharon, whom she had reason to hope was still human. She neither found nor contacted anyone before she was spotted. But I struggled, fighting against another blank wall. I think she left a note. Somewhere.
So she expected someone would look for her?
The seeker asked eagerly.
Yes, she will be missed if she does not rendezvous with...
I gritted my teeth, truly fighting now. The wall was black,
and I could not tell how thick it was. I battered against it, sweat beading on my forehead. The seeker and the healer were very quiet, allowing me to concentrate. I tried thinking of something else. The loud, unfamiliar noises the engine of the car had made. The jittery rush of adrenaline every time the lights of another vehicle drew near on the road. I already had this, and nothing fought me. I let the memory carry me along, let it skip over the cold hike through the city under the sheltering darkness of night, let it wind its way to the building where they'd found me. Not me. Her. My body shuddered.
"Don't overextend," the healer began.
The seeker shushed him. I let my mind dwell on the horror of discovery, the burning hatred of the seekers that overpowered almost everything else. The hatred was evil. It was pain. I could hardly bear to feel it. But I let it run its course, hoping it would distract the resistance, weaken the defenses. I watched carefully as she tried to hide, and then knew she could not. A note, scratched on a piece of debris with a broken pencil, shoved hastily under a door. Not just any door. "The pattern is the fifth door along the fifth hall on the fifth floor. Her communication is there." The seeker had a small phone in her hand. She murmured rapidly into it. "The building was supposed to be safe," I continued. "They knew it was condemned. She doesn't know how it was discovered. Did they find Sharon?" A chill of horror raised goosebumps on my arms. The question was not mine. The question wasn't mine, but it flowed naturally through my lips as if it were. The seeker did not notice anything amiss. "The cousin? No, they found no other human," she answered, and my body relaxed in response. "This host was spotted entering the building. Since the building was known to be condemned, the citizen who observed her was concerned. He called us and we watched the building to see if we could catch more than one and then moved in when that seemed unlikely. Can you find the rendezvous point?" I tried. So many memories, all of them so colorful and sharp. I saw 100 places I'd never been, heard their names for the first time. A house in Los Angeles, lined with tall, fronded trees. A meadow in a forest with a tent and a fire outside Winslow, Arizona. A deserted rocky beach in Mexico. A cave, the entrance guarded by sheeting rain somewhere in Oregon. Tents, huts, rude shelters. As time went on, the names grew less specific. She did not know where she was, nor did she care. My name was now Wanderer, yet her memories fit it just as well as my own, except that my wandering was by choice. These flashes of memory were always tinged with the fear of the hunted, not wandering, but running. I tried not to feel pity. Instead, I worked to focus the memories. I didn't need to see where she'd been, only where she was going. I sorted through the pictures that tied to the word Chicago, but none seemed to be anything more than random images. I widened my net. What was outside Chicago? Cold, I thought. It was cold, and there was some worry about that. "Where?" I pushed, and the wall came back. I exhaled in a gust. "Outside the city, in the wilderness, a state park away from any habitations. It's not somewhere she'd been before, but she knew how to get there." "How soon?" the seeker asked. "Soon." The answer came automatically. "How long have I been here?"
"We let the host heal for 9 days just to be absolutely sure she was recovered," the healer told me. "Insertion was today, the 10th day."
10 days.
My body felt a staggering wave of relief.
"Too late," I said, "for the rendezvous point, or even the note." I could feel the host's reaction to this, could feel it much too strongly. The host was almost
Smug!
I allowed the words she thought to be spoken so that I could learn from them.
He won't be there. He?
The seeker pounced on the pronoun.
Who?
The black wall slammed down with more force than she'd used before. She was the tiniest fraction of a second too late. Again the face filled my mind. The beautiful face with the golden tan skin and the light-flecked eyes. The face that stirred a strange, deep pleasure within me while I viewed it so clearly in my mind. Though the wall slapped into place with an accompanying sensation of vicious resentment, it was not fast enough.
Jared, I answered.
As quickly as if it had come from me, the thought that was not mine followed the name through my lips.
Jared is safe.
Chapter 4
Dreamed.
It is too dark to be so hot. Or maybe too hot to be so dark. One of the two is out of place. I crouch in the darkness behind the weak protection of a scrubby creosote bush, sweating out all the water left in my body. It's been 15 minutes since the car left the garage. No lights have come on. The Arcadia door is open 2 inches, letting the swamp cooler do its job. I can imagine the feel of the moist, cool air blowing through the screen. I wish it could reach me here. My stomach gurgles, and I clench my abdominal muscles to stifle the sound. It is quiet enough that the murmur carries. I am so hungry. There is another need that is stronger, another hungry stomach hidden safely far away in the darkness, waiting alone in the rough cave that is our temporary home. A cramped place, jagged with volcanic rock. What will he do if I don't come back? All the pressure of motherhood with none of the knowledge or experience. I feel so hideously helpless. Jamie is hungry. There are no other houses close to this one. I've been watching since the sun was still white hot in the sky, and I don't think there is a dog either. I ease up from my crouch, my calves screaming in protest, but keep hunched at the waist, trying to be smaller than the bush. The way up the wash is smooth sand, a pale pathway in the light of the stars. There are no sounds of cars on the road. I know what they will realize when they return. The monsters, who look like a nice couple in their early 50s. They will know exactly what I am, and the search will begin at once. I need to be far away. I really hope they are going out for a night on the town. I think it's Friday. They keep our habits so perfectly it's hard to see any difference. Which is how they won in the first place. The fence around the yard is only waist high. I get over easily, noiselessly. The yard is gravel, though, and I have to walk carefully to keep my weight from shifting it. I make it to the patio slab. The blinds are open. The starlight is enough to see that the rooms are empty of movement. This couple goes for a Spartan look, and I'm grateful. It makes it harder for someone to hide. Of course, that leaves no place for me to hide either, but if it comes to hiding for me, it's too late anyway. I ease the screen door open first and then the glass door. Both glide silently. I place my feet carefully on the tile, but this is just out of habit. No one is waiting for me here. The cool air feels like heaven. The kitchen is to my left. I can see the gleam of granite counters. I pull the canvas bag from my shoulder and start with the refrigerator. There is a moment of anxiety as the light comes on when the door opens, but I find the button and hold it down with my toe. My eyes are blind. I don't have time to let them adjust. I go by feel. Milk, cheese slices, leftovers in a plastic bowl. I hope it's the chicken and rice thing I watched him cooking for dinner. We'll eat this tonight. Juice, a bag of apples, baby carrots. These will stay good till morning. I hurry to the pantry. I need things that will keep longer. I can see better as I gather as much as I can carry. Chocolate chip cookies. I'm dying to open the bag right now, but I grit my teeth and ignore the twist of my empty stomach. The bag gets heavy too quickly. This will last us only a week, even if we're careful with it. And I don't feel like being careful, I feel like gorging. I shove granola bars into my pockets. One more thing. I hurry to the sink and refill my canteen. Then I put my head under the flow and gulp straight from the stream. The water makes odd noises when it hits my hollow stomach. I start to feel panicked now that my job is done. I want to be out of here. Civilization is deadly. I watch the floor on my way out, worried about tripping with my heavy bag, which is why I don't see the silhouetted black figure on the patio until my hand is on the door. I hear his mumbled oath at the same time that a stupid squeak of fear escapes my mouth. I spin to sprint for the front door, hoping the locks are not latched, or at least not difficult. I don't even get two steps before rough, hard hands grab my shoulders and wrench me back against his body. Too big, too strong to be a woman. The bass voice proves me right.
"One sound and you die," he threatens gruffly.
I am shocked to